This is Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. Our state used to boast a pretty strong education system, but things have been going in the wrong direction to the point where most any measurement serves up bad news. The National Assessment of Educational Progress, the nation's report card, finds Michigan is in the bottom third of all states in fourth grade reading and math and eighth grade math. The new state superintendent of schools is Brian Whiston. His goal? To make Michigan a top 10 performing state within the next 10 years. Michigan Radio's State of Opportunity team has been reporting on Michigan schools, so they've got some suggestions for Superintendent Whiston. Jennifer Guerra is with us now. Jen, 3 years of reporting on Michigan schools, it's really given you and the other members of the team some good insight into what's needed to make this a top 10 education state. Where does this quest need to start?
The first thing I would say is we really need to figure out how much money it takes to educate a child in Michigan. We don't have that magic number yet. There is a wide gap in terms of how much one school gets versus another. I think it's something like a $5,000 gap between the richest and poorest schools. And they are starting to do an adequacy study on that from the state. The state is trying to do an adequacy study. I think we are going to find out in March what that magic number is.
And I think most people would be pretty startled to know that we do not have that hard and fast number about what it costs to deliver a basic public education.
Yeah, a lot of states have it, but a lot of it has been because a court told them to find this adequacy number, and we just haven't had that. I am really interested to find out what they find out.
And certainly, as you look at other states that are doing a better job of educating their kids, you can't do it on the cheap. Can you?
No. High quality costs money. It costs money to find great teachers and to pay them adequately. And having resources for kids, that all takes money, right? You can't do it on the cheap.
Now, let's say the stars align, the legislature pulls together and puts enough money into the education system. And you've pointed to a school in the Upper Peninsula that can show the rest of the state really how to use the money it gets and do it wisely.
Right. Brimley Elementary. The reason I looked at Brimley Elementary, and I should give a shout out to the folks at Education Trust Midwest, because they're the ones that sort of highlighted the school for me when I was looking into it. The reason I chose the school is because it has a population that generally does not perform as well. A high majority of Native American children who historically and statistically have low test scores for a variety of reasons, and a number of the students in the school are low income, right? So you have two very big at-risk factors, and yet the kids at Brimley are vastly outperforming the rest of the state in terms of the average test scores. So they're doing something right at Brimley, but again, it comes down to money. So Brimley does get extra money from the federal government because they have this big Native American population, but then they take that money and they use it wisely, right? So they use it on interventions that have been proven to work. They use it on small class sizes. They have routine assessments. We're talking like every month they're assessing these children to make sure they're where they need to be. And if they are not where they need to be, they get more help.
Early intervention.
Mm-hmm. They have more teachers and specialists to keep the classroom small. I think K through second grade had at least two teachers in each classroom, like a teacher and an assistant. Mm-hmm. And yeah, there's just a big emphasis on early intervention. One teacher I spoke to when I was there, she said, you know, the students are, quote, getting a lot more of exactly what they need, which, you know, that should be a good model.
It sounds so simple, but it's right. Interesting how it often doesn't happen.
Yeah, there's no like secret sauce to like what makes Brimley great. I think that was one of the most surprising things when I went up there, because I was expecting to come back and have this big story and like, here is what they're doing. And actually, the story is they do get a little more money and they use it wisely.
We have to talk about test scores, and I know Destin Dwyer spent 6 weeks at a public elementary school in Grand Rapids exploring this very, very issue. What did he learn?
Well, I think that's also a case where he was surprised by what he learned. I think the school that he followed, Congress Elementary, they don't have great test scores, and so he went in thinking he would find the school to be a mess. Mm-hmm. And that is not what he found at all. So his, you know, big takeaway is you cannot judge a school on test scores alone, right? So if we are looking at what makes a school great and how to make a great education state, just relying on test scores is not going to answer the question.
In fact, didn't he come away saying, I found myself not wondering what was wrong with the school. I was wondering what was wrong with the test.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. That's insight. Expectations play a role in this. And I know Sarah Alvarez gained some very interesting insights from studying the schools and the students in Stockbridge.
Right. She went to a small rural town and spent a lot of time there doing a great series on what it's like to be in a rural district. And high expectations were a big thing that she found. So if teachers and principals treated kids in a way that showed them that they could meet their level of expectation and could perform at the level that they were supposed to be, the kids would step up and perform at that level. And, it takes parent involvement, too.
That's the thing. We can't just all be pointing fingers at the school and at principals and teachers going, make it better.
Of course, right? So you can't, students aren't in school 24 hours a day. They go home. At the same time, I would say, it's, again, there is some onus on the school. I spent a lot of time at Cody High School, and their parent-teacher conference was a time that no working parent would really be able to go. And these aren't, especially at this high school, these aren't parents who have white-collar positions where they're on salary and they can take time off. These are people who work hourly, and they would have to make a big sacrifice to make that parent-teacher conference.
And lose money.
That
they need.
Right.
And so by not coming, it's easy to fall into the narrative that they're
not
uninvolved.
Involved. Right. And I do think, at another school I followed, there was like an open house, and I followed the school downriver, and three families came to the open house. And the other school I followed was in Novi, and that was a middle to upper middle class school. And all but three parents came to the open house. That was in the evening. That was like an 8 or 9, Maybe they could have come. But again, you don't know the circumstances. Maybe they should offer more than one open house. Maybe they have little kids at home and they couldn't get a babysitter. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a lot of things. But yes, there needs to be more interaction between parents and schools.
Jen, as you and the other members of the State of Opportunity team continue talking with students and parents and teachers and administrators, do you hear a belief and a commitment to pull Michigan's educational system out of this tailspin?
I mean, I think everybody wants to do that.
They want it. But you know what I'm saying is, is the gumption there and to do what's going to need to be done?
On the state level, I'm just not sure. I mean, when I'm in the schools, because that's really what I report on, is from inside the school, I think you work with what you have. If you're working with like a crumbling infrastructure, a crumbling building, and no textbooks, and teachers who have one foot out the door because it's not their first place that they want to be, mm-hmm. they want to be in a better district. I mean, you're working with what you have. And so, I think when you're in the class, you're just trying to get day to day, and you're trying to get these kids to show up, and you're trying, I'm talking about the lower income mm-hmm. students here, right? And you're trying to get them to pass their tests so that your school doesn't get a failing grade. I mean, that's what you're thinking about, and you're thinking about the limited resources that you have to do that. Two other things I would point out is when I did that school-to-school comparison between this downriver school that was very low income and Novi.
Mm-hmm.
And again, this does come down to money. And I know a lot of people say money is not the issue, But what I would say just based on like what I saw is that you had a school with a high poverty population and a higher special ed population, and they got far less money than the school with the middle to upper middle class students and a lower special ed population. So you have a higher risk population with less money, and something to look at.
Something to look at. Well, it'll be interesting as we talk with Superintendent Whiston to see what he wants to do to lead the charge in Lansing to get Michigan to that goal of his as a top 10 education state.
It's a great goal to have. It'll be really interesting to see how he plans to do that and to see how legislation from Lansing comes down the pike to see if that is going to, in fact, lead us to be a top 10 education state.
Jennifer Guerra is with Michigan Radio's State of Opportunity team. Thank you so much.
Thank you.